This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Coaches, welcome to the Talking Split Podcast. I'm Rob Calder, riding semi-solo for the podcast this week. Those of you that listened to last week's episode will know that the under 20 Australian Junior Championships are on at the moment, so we are a little light-handed in terms of staff in the BV office. So what we are going to play for you today is a bit of a pre-recorded interview we did from last year that we'll finally get around to dropping now. So those of you that might be in the know, Zoe and I were in Paris last year for a little bit of a holiday, and we do struggle to go too long without basketball in our lives. So we combined the trip with a little bit of PD along the way and called into Paris Basketball, which is a little bit of a newly founded club over the last probably 3 or 4 years, I think it is. But their head coach is Will Weaver, who very gracious with his time. I'm sure most coaches would know Will Weaver from his time with the Sydney Kings. His coaching resume doesn't stop there. He's been involved with various roles over the years with Texas Longhorns, Sam Houston State, Philadelphia 76ers, Brooklyn Nets, Long Island Nets, Houston Rockets, and where he is currently now with Paris Basketball. Of course, along the way, also involved with our Australian Boomers team in various capacities and various roles. So a really great, diverse background for him with his coaching, and very, very generous with his time. He certainly didn't have to talk to random Australians just rolling through Paris at the time, but was very, very gracious to speak to us and give us a little bit of a look at their training session as well over the course. So really lucky to get some time with him. The recording is a little bit flaky, so I do apologise for that. The sound isn't quite as good as the dulcet tones that you're getting at the moment, so I do apologise there, but hopefully, coaches, you'll be able to get a lot out of it. I know I certainly did, and watching the practice as well, which I'll have a little bit of a chat to you about afterwards. I think it was a really valuable part realistically, just being able to watch another coach train their athletes. So without anything further, we'll jump into the podcast with Will Weaver.
Very, very fortunate here as we're in downtown Paris, or part of downtown Paris, to have the head coach of Paris Basketball, Will Weaver. Congratulations on the role here, and thanks for having us in.
Thanks so much. Lovely to have some Aussies come visit us.
I must admit, it's been one of those areas where it's nice straight away to walk in and hear English. Like, we've been trying and we've butchered this language. Like, there is no tomorrow. Like, there have been so many appreciative and understanding Parisians that are like, we get it. Like, this is not your first language.
Some of them just walk straight up to us and say, English? Yeah. So they obviously see us coming.
Yeah, we have that that feel about us, obviously. But how have you ended up here? Like, we obviously saw you in the NBL last, from an Australian perspective. How have you ended up in Paris Basketball?
Yeah, coaching and life is a long and winding road, obviously. The experience that I had in Australia in my second professional head coaching job gave me so much to go back and study and think about how I could do it better. And so although the role I was serving in Houston these past couple years, working with the Rockets as an assistant coach, let me get my hands back directly with players and work on a more kind of granular level with their development, as opposed to being zoomed out and in charge like I was in Sydney. In my mind, I was going back through and thinking about all the things I was excited to improve upon and learn from that experience and try out. And so now I've been able to come to a place where not only there's that rich basketball kind of laboratory opportunity, but also from a life perspective, bring my young family to Paris and get to struggle and learn in all sorts of ways, similar to the way that you just alluded to off the court as well.
Yeah. We made comment yesterday that we were walking down the street and heard a four-year-old speaking French, and it's like, it's a real concern when you're walking past, it's like a four-year-old can communicate a little better than you can in this country. Like, no, it's one of those areas.
The concern is that he can probably speak English as well.
Yeah, probably true.
And probably better than us.
Yeah, which is a little alarming, to be fair to say. So, I mean, Paris Basketball is a fairly new franchise overall, just been promoted recently. What's the end goal for Paris Basketball as a club? Like, how far can they go with this? Obviously, it's a great destination club as well. Like, what's the plan?
Maybe not that dissimilar to when I got to Sydney. The foundation of the club well and truly existed before I got here. There's lots of folks that have been striving over the past four seasons that this club has existed to get it to the point where it's at the top level of French basketball, playing in Betclic Elite, and then against the Euro Cup competition, which is the second highest level in Europe. So for me coming in, again, similar to where I arrived in Sydney, there were hungry, talented people here already, and it's been my job to try to help those people coalesce and synergize, or whatever kind of buzzword you want to pick, while at the same time trying to speed up my own learning curve to a new league and a new culture. And really, two leagues, our Euro Cup competition is so different in lots of ways in terms of style, as opposed to the LMB league, that it feels like double the fun for me and double the learning. But for the goal of the club, of course, you know, they were almost relegated last year, so they're extremely young. They have two players that were drafted in the last two drafts, Juhan Beggerman for the Boston Celtics and Isma Kamagate for the Nuggets. And so part of my role is to help them grow and get the opportunity to be a part of their training camps in the NBA. You have guys like Axel Tupan and Ty Wallace, guys, Amir Sims, guys who've had experiences with NBA clubs and want to get back there. So there's surely that development piece, sort of like with Jayshon and Didi and those guys that we had, Xavier and Sydney. But then there's also guys that have been here and are ready to reap the reward of all the invested time and energy that have been working their whole careers to get to a place where they could be playing at this level of basketball. And so it isn't as if we're all development and not focused at all on the results, but I personally haven't seen a lot of success with people who are just working to chase, you know, 2 points on Saturday as opposed to trying to lay the groundwork for lots and lots and lots of 2 points over the next series of months and years. So that's where my focus lies.
I mean, you hit on it, which is a really interesting part from us. We talk about competition structure and what basketball looks like from an Australian perspective. What is the structure here in France? Like, do you guys have the junior academies that feed into your program? How do you identify athletes for that? But what does it look like here?
Yeah, I think there are certainly clubs that have existed for a long period of time who have built an incredible groundwork for that kind of development. And we're after it here. We have an Espoir team, which is the youngest cohort, high school age kids. We have a under 18 team that competes as well as under the Paris basketball label. We currently don't have a women's team, but most other clubs have built that as a part of their Centre de Formation. And so those are things that are underway with us and that we're continuing to invest in. But we've got two 17-year-olds that practice with us and play with us every day. And those two guys are super talented and have big dreams. And our hope is to fill this place up with lots more of them as time goes on and get them reps at every level that you can.
Zoe's just heard there's no women's team and is currently writing a resume out at the moment. Like, if you manage to get one, like, she's more than happy to throw a hat in the ring.
Pay
on
me
that.
In croissants, thank you. No. But when we talk about development, I think the Euro style in general is probably the envy of the world. It's certainly the envy of us as developers in Australia to be able to have almost like that umbrella effect of having athletes that come through your pathway. It's a legitimate pathway, which is great. When you're talking about those athletes, what would you say are the, you know, skill sets, the concept knowledge, those sort of things that they need to sort of possess at certain levels to be able to, I guess, come into that pathway?
The first thing that is heavily influenced by my time in Australia working with some of the best sports scientists in the world is the physical piece. And, you know, it's become a cliche almost that the best ability is availability. But for these young athletes, for so long, coaches had the misjudgment to believe that they could run forever and practice for hours and hours and absorb any sort of physical punishment because they were young. And of course, it's the exact opposite. They're the most vulnerable, the least robust often. And so trying to build a base of strength and endurance that allows them to train the amount that they need to train in order to improve their skills. I mean, training time on task is a huge variable that you're trying to pump energy into. And so that's where a lot of our energy goes, is helping them get to a place physically where they deserve practice rep against grown men, and they can make the most of a practice with us and then 30 minutes in an Espoir game and then maybe 10 minutes with the pro team the following day. That is where I think, in large part because of the work of Aussie AIS and basketball federations that have used this sort of incredible groundswell of talent that's grown up in Australia over the last 25, 30 years, that the sport has benefited from it. But from a basketball perspective, it's still boring old dribbling, passing, shooting, with some cool modern neuroscience and pedagogy and mixed in, helping people realize that there are desirable difficulties when it comes to learning, not dissimilar from the weight room. So we try to find a place where we are at the edge of their competency, and we're trying to space and interleave and create recall practice on the information side of things, as well as the skill motor learning side of things.
It's such an interesting roster you've got when you look at it. Like, you've got a number of Parisians, you've got people from all over the world literally playing in the one team. How do you get everyone on the same page? Like, do you have language barriers with that as well? Like, how have you gone with it, going from a predominantly English-speaking background into the French world?
Yeah, I'm not sure you can call Bogut's accent English. But
no, that's something completely different.
Yeah. So there absolutely are struggles. As you've probably guessed, the kids on our team speak way better English than I do French, learning every day. But there's lots of times that we're in a timeout or we're in a practice drill and everybody's smiling and nodding and it feels like we got it. And then we go do something that looks totally dissimilar to what I thought we were talking about. Probably much the same way as when, poor servers at restaurants take my order in French and just smile, have to smile and nod afterwards. So I'm lucky that I've got a great staff of people that support me and help pick up the dropped crumbs through the cracks that invariably are going to come spilling out of my mouth when I start talking fast and where the bullets are flying and you're in the middle of a game or a practice. But a lot of the fun is that challenge. You know, there's a game within a game here that Isma Kamagate is going to hopefully be better for having to listen to my crazy ass talk when he's got Mike Malone yelling at him next year and he's got Nikola Jokic, you know, backing him down in practice. So that's part and parcel of why we're all here.
Well, it probably rings true to a lot of parent coaches out there as well, that, you know, you come in there with all the greatest of intentions, this is what I'm going to say and here's how I'm going to deliver it. Little 9-year-old kids just smiling and nodding.
For sure.
It's like, yeah, this doesn't look anything like what we thought it would look like. And you've been all over the world with your coaching. Obviously, you came through the college pathway, into the pro leagues, in G League, NBA, NBL. Where does this league rank? Rank's probably not the right word, but what are the similarities between this league and where you've been previously? Like, style of play, what does it look like? Sort of matchups, zones, presses? Like, what are you seeing that's kind of similar to what you've had before?
The diversity of style is probably my favorite aspect of international hoops. America is so homogenous in the ways that they play. Excuse me. And I'm just selfish. I'm a selfish person, and I like new stuff that helps me learn. And so the chance to get to experience a whole new set of styles of play and schemes here in France, added on to more than double that amount playing in EuroCup, where you've got a team from Greece coming in here this week. We just got back from Poland, Montenegro the week before, London next week. And so you just see the wide range of ways that this game can be played. This experience is the closest thing that I experienced to the NBL, which had, I thought, an incredible range of styles when I was there, and leading up to the time that I was there. So the NBL has always been, and probably always will be, one of the leagues that I watch most closely because of that diversity of style. And I think for basketball development, younger teams, younger players, not just in the NBL, but obviously the WNBL and across NBL1, the state teams, the national teams, there's such a robust and a sophisticated set of styles that kids can learn from, that players can learn from, and that I'm still learning from. And so that's one of my favorite parts of this job.
And it must be difficult. I suppose you came into the NBL with a fairly good understanding of who everyone was in that league, obviously through your time with the Australian Boomers. You knew a lot of the coaches that are around. Did you know anything coming into this league, or has this been learned on the job pretty quickly?
A lot less. Yeah. I mean, this summer for me was spent in front of a laptop watching a lot of Synergy. But the experience that I had with the Boomers gave me at least some reference points in terms of how, you know, Vincent Calais, coaches in this league and coached the French national team for as long as I've been doing it. And so you see his style kind of filter down into many of the French pro teams, probably because of the development that goes on, not dissimilar to Andre Lemonis, you know, the impact he had with bringing the flow, you know, too big, roll and replace, second side action that is really common over here, so common that we just call it Euro pick and roll continuity. That was, I think, new when he started coaching in New Zealand. And you saw when we got there, it's like there wasn't a team that wasn't running flow to some degree. So having that experience to play against Serbia, play against France, play against Spain, you get at least an appreciation for what I was coming into. But yeah, there's plenty more room to grow, that's for sure.
I suppose any time you go into a pro environment, one of the big questions is imports and who can you bring in, how are they going to fit? How did you go about finding the right fit for a league you hadn't actually coached in before? Like, this will probably be a lot easier, assuming you keep the same imports or whatever the case may be moving forward, but how do you work out what is going to fit in a league you haven't actually coached in to that point?
Well, truth is, I came in late in the game, and so you know, I accepted this job in early August, and this pretty much entire continent, but certainly this entire country, shuts down during August for holidays. So everyone is, restaurants are shuttered, banks sometimes aren't open, you can't find an apartment. So not only just finding the import you want, but getting their contract processed and finding them a place to live and getting them flights can be a challenge, believe it or not. So our general manager is David Kahn. He ran Minnesota Timberwolves for a number of years and worked across the NBA. So he leads our efforts when it comes to player recruitment. I was able to chip in with our last two signings with at least the labor of love of watching Synergy clips and calling around and asking their coaches about them. And so Amir Sims and Ty Wallace we brought on since I joined. But most of the rest of the team was already here when we got here. And then inevitably you end up having injuries or open spots come around. And so we ended up signing Amar Djigic, who's a Bosnian national. They're starting point guard on their national team. He's joined us. And we also signed Jeremy Evans, who had a long career in the NBA and has played in Panathinaikos and a number of other places around Europe. So what you said about us being a United Nations of players and coaches is certainly true, but we've still yet to play a game with our full roster, even excluding those new signings. And so the injuries and gastroenteritis and COVID world, all that stuff combines into meaning that it's about to be January, and I think by that time, hopefully we will have everybody healthy and together at least for a week or two so we can see what we got.
That's incredible. So how was your coaching philosophy, I suppose, change coming here? Have you had to bend with things? Have you had to change completely from where you were at previously? Like, what's it look like now compared to before you got here?
Yeah, the fundamentals, I think, are mostly unchanged. There isn't a sea change in how efficient basketball is being played, I don't think, but the appreciating where our players were coming from, both in terms of the returners that had been a part of this program in the past years, and also just the way basketball is played in Europe mostly, is dissimilar from the style that I coached in Sydney and that most NBA-related teams play. And so my goal was always to try to keep good and block bad, you know, like let's whatever works, let's try to keep doing it. Isma Kamagate is a great rim runner. Let's run to the rim. You know, let's not just have him in delay because Mike D'Antoni's a great coach and every NBA team is five out now. Like, that makes no sense. But how can we then use him once he's at the rim to still involve him as a pick and roll screener? And what can we do to, you know, find the right kinds of triggers that within a conceptual framework help our guys learn how to play rather than learn specific plays? That was always going to be an approach that I will advocate for because of the way I believe that it can help you across a long season, which this is almost a 10-month enterprise that we've got here in Paris, been playing in two European competitions, but also to the degree that it lets the players grow and grow through mistakes and struggle. And so my need to change, the ways that I sort of figured out what things needed to be different was helped greatly by not being allowed to coach the first four games while a bureaucratic diploma French thing played out. So I had just had to sit there quietly for the first four games, four close losses. And it gave me an amazing opportunity to watch our group play with some of these concepts, but without me to help kind of guide us while the action was going on and see where we really struggled. And I wouldn't have chosen that, but the lemonade that we made out of it was, okay, well, we can see now where we need to invest more time to identify the concepts that haven't really sunk in yet.
It's phenomenal. Just even coming in here, like the whole, I mean, Paris in itself is obviously phenomenal. It's, you know, we get off a train, we walk 200 meters, we're at the stadium, like where you play, where you train. The whole setup is just fantastic. It's a great reward, I think, for the amount of time you've put in to your coaching across the world. And that's the hard part, I suppose, for a lot of coaches is that they coach very well in the backyard, but you've had to get out of your backyard a number of times where you've been really comfortable at a college level or a G League level or an NBA level, NBL level. To get to this point, it's a phenomenal story. And even your time with the Boomers, like it's all of that sort of stuff. You had to sacrifice a lot along the way. How did you get past the family that you were moving to Paris to take a coaching job? And they probably spent a lot of time everywhere else.
Yeah, well, life is a team sport. And so you get that one right and everything gets easier, and you get that one wrong and everything gets damn near impossible. So Lauren and Theo are my team, and we have moved for pediatric residencies and for MBA front office jobs and for national team kinds of reasons. The gratitude that I have that I get to do life with them is unending. But the idea of 10 months in Paris and all the croissant you can eat and learn a language and have our kid get to live on his third continent before he turned 4 years old, like that wasn't a hard sell. But as compared to, you know, we were considering options back in Australia this summer. There were head coaching roles that we were taking a long look at. And so the luxury for us is we've had so many experiences together that we have high standards and we're able to pick things that excite us, and this certainly sits within that.
So is there any, when we talk about it with players a lot, like what's their end goal, where they want to get to, where do you want to get to with your coaching? Like, what is your end goal look like? Do you even have one, or is it literally just we'll see what this plays out and we'll take this sort of 6 to 12 months at a time and work it out from there? Is there anything that's sort of like a burning fire for you that I want to do that, like that's the thing?
Yeah, I've worked with so many programs that were at the start, either literally at the start or at a new start for their programs. And so the experience that I had at Sam Houston State with a first time ever head coach, to coming to Philadelphia 76ers at the beginning of the process, to the Brooklyn Nets after the Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett trade, to Sydney, now here, even the Rockets, all of that has filled me with a real passion for building stuff. And so, Camelot is what you want. You know, you want to try, what I want to try to do is I want to try to build something great and with people that are similarly motivated and that you enjoy being around. And so where we do that and how often we get the chance to for all those stars to align in order to get an opportunity like that, what league that's going to be in, all of those are mostly not up to me. But those are the kinds of things that really attract me.
Yeah. And it's funny, you mentioned, like, with Andre, obviously, with Flo, and that sort of, you look at the NBL league at the moment, and there are certainly some breadcrumbs from when Andre was still in the league. Mm-hmm. I think we look at a few of your last stops as well, and we still see the same breadcrumbs. We look at Sydney and the culture that's been built there and how they're going. A lot of that is testament to the work that you did there as well, and I'm sure you have the same hope that if and when you do leave Paris basketball, it's the same sort of thing. It's one of the things that everyone we talk to, and we say, look, who is one of the most respected coaches? Your name always comes up in the top 3 to 5, which is a fantastic thing to hear. And we are unbelievably grateful for the opportunity to at least come and talk to you and then watch practice and see you guys play tomorrow night, even if you don't have your full team until January. Like, we're super excited to see it as well. Like, we pine for European basketball a lot in Australia, and we probably grew up in a different background where the most access we got to international basketball was a Saturday morning when it was on for an hour, and you know, we had to go to the stadium and watch it, and you know, that was what we got. And you know, your background from the collegiate to the pro league and now here is just it's a really interesting one for so many people. So we can't thank you enough for your time this morning and getting to watch practice. We're super pumped for at the moment, and the game tomorrow night's just as good. So
that's very generous. Thank you. I will always feel like Australia basketball and the people that make up Australia basketball are, and I hope will continue to be, something that the rest of the world envies, because there are people like you guys who are investing in your own coaching and helping others with how they work, and that is not typical. There's a passion for sport in Australia that is unrivaled, and even the cultural sorts of ideas of mateship and giving something a go, having a crack, is something that I am glad that my son got a little bit of living, you know, steps from the beach for nearly 2 years, and something that I will always appreciate about Australian players and coaches and support staff. And so I'd encourage everybody to not overlook how remarkable the basketball culture is in Australia, and how there are many people in Europe right now, and in the United States for that matter, who are looking to Australia to try to learn and steal. So take advantage of it in the same ways that we do.
We greatly appreciate it. So, Will, thank you so much for your time. Even jumping on this today, like, it was, yeah, no problems. Like, we'll just get it done. Like, it's fantastic. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
For jumping into this, and good luck for the rest of the season. Everyone, I'm sure, will be following Paris basketball now and just see how you guys go.
Cheers.
So good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Big thanks once again to Will Weaver for allowing us to have a chat, but also allowing to watch their practice session. So it was a bit of a light session for the athletes. They had a game the next night, so it was largely just a little bit of shooting and some walkthroughs and things like that. There was a little bit of teaching that went along with it as well, which was great, and tons of great information to take away from it. So can't speak highly enough of Will or his staff that made us feel incredibly welcome the whole time. We somehow navigated the metro system to make our way to the stadium. We did get on the wrong train to start off with and went in the opposite direction, which was not ideal, but we did manage to get there in the end. Got a copy of the session plan, bottle of water to start off with, always happy to chat and talk us through whatever they were doing the whole time. And being in a different country, it's always great to know that there's someone you can reach out to and just talk to. And Will was fantastic. He's like, hey, you need recommendations for like restaurants, or if you need to know where you're going for this. Got tickets to the game, which was brilliant. Again, it's just a really hospitable thing to do for a couple of random coaches from Australia that he'd never met before, but he was just really gracious with his time, and he certainly didn't have to do that either. So we are eternally grateful to Will Weaver for jumping on the podcast, and big thanks to Pete Lonigan as well for hooking us up between the two of us and making that connection there. So if you can have a little bit of a watch of Paris basketball and see what they're doing, I'm sure you'll see a little bit of what you would have seen with the Sydney Kings when Will was there, but also a lot of the other things he's learned, like his experience coming through the coaching pathway is just phenomenal. It's a really diverse look at everything. And it's just really fascinating to talk to someone that has been through and understands the Australian system, that is now coaching internationally at that real sort of pinnacle stage as well. So it's someone that's got a real understanding and appreciation for what Australian basketball is. And even his point at the end there of, you know, don't take for granted what we have in Australia. I know a lot of our athletes look to go and do the college thing, and a lot of them want to play NBA, WNBA. NBL, WNBL is such a good system for them as well to be involved in, if they can be involved in it. And so we do have a really fortunate pathway for our athletes to be in, but also our coaches to be involved in too. So it is it's really interesting to get a different take and different perspective on what Australian basketball looks like from someone that's been involved with it. That does wrap us up for this week. So I do apologise to all our, in particular, probably our country coaches that are probably heading off to country champs this weekend. Normally we would fill in an hour 10-ish of your time. We're going to probably come in at around about half an hour on this time. So it was an important podcast to get out for us, because you know, obviously we caught up with Will in the hope that we could share a little bit of knowledge. It does unfortunately come in at about that 30-minute mark. The best I could do is maybe rap or beatbox for you or something like that, but we sort of thought it would probably be a better idea to just play the Will Weaver pod and go from there. So, coaches, good luck with what's going on in your world for the weekend, and we'll catch you guys back on the podcast next week. Look, tune in, join the tribe.